Welcome to Real Estate Radio Live, an informative and engaging podcast discussing everything you need to know about the world of real estate. Your host, Joe Cacera, provides you with insight and guidance on how to buy, sell, finance, and invest in real estate. He also offers real estate tax management strategies, new construction advice, home improvement tips, and much, much more. And now, to guide you around the world of real estate, here's your host and Real Estate Radio Live team leader, Joe Cacera.
Welcome in, Joe Cacera with Real Estate Radio Live. Thank you for those that are joining the show, and thank you for those that continue to follow the show. It's been hard to believe, almost 11 years since we started the live radio and now podcast, and we still continue to get thousands of downloads a month. So I want to always take an opportunity to thank those that download the show and pass it along. We get some great responses back and forth. And also, Jack Russo, who is joining us from Florida again. Now, before we break any news, I don't know if I'm the one to do that. Is this the permanent residence of the Computer Law Group, or is this just a temporary setting?
Well, I think we opened an actual Tampa office, and we actually have a building that's as big, if not bigger, than our office space. So, you know, there's talent, there's legal talent here, and there's actually a fair amount of interesting companies that are starting to sort of get created. I don't think it's Silicon Valley East yet, but I think it has the potential to be a Silicon Valley East. And given this family situation and my brother dying and this uncertainty about how my mom gets handled, because she doesn't want to go into a nursing home. She's got that old Italian view of, I'm going to die in my house. Mm. And of course she will die in her house if no one takes care of her, because she'll probably slip and fall and kill herself. So I'm trying to do the right thing. And we are kind of in the middle of a pandemic where most of the court hearings can be done by phone, including to the U.S. Supreme Court, who's hearing argument by phone. And so I'm trying to make lemonade out of lemons as best as possible. And at the same time, I'm seeing firsthand the fact that there is something to be said for being a resident of Florida and taking the Florida bar and becoming a member of the bar in Florida and expanding the way to think about serving clients nationally, because we've always served clients nationally and have always had a foot on the East Coast, although typically it's been either New York or DC or Boston or someplace further north. We've had some cases in Florida. We've had some cases in Georgia. We have a case in Georgia now. We have clients in North Carolina. So we've got, you know, we've got some presence here. So yeah, I guess I'd like to think of myself as being more bi-coastal these days than anything else. Although I do miss California to some degree, because I did have a great set of friends, and hopefully I still do. And we did have the ability, we used to have the ability to do things together, but of course that got squelched by this whole COVID thing. So it's a very special period of time in the world, if you look
at it. It is for sure. Well, this is great, because we'll be able to dialogue kind of the real life transition of a person who spent 40 plus years in Silicon Valley and Northern California and now getting a taste of Florida. But let's talk a little bit today about our confirmation that we all been watching and actually intrigued with, and maybe, you know, from a legal perspective, you could speak to it better than anybody. Maybe give us an overview of your first impressions of Amy Comey Barrett, and then maybe we could talk a little bit about, does any of this stuff get you thinking any more about any legal aspects or what California is going to have any benefits, or is this just another, I don't know, listening to Feinstein, and now you and I were talking a little bit off the record here before we started. You just wonder where California is headed. So maybe if you could start by giving us your assessment of Amy Comey Barrett and maybe your thoughts about it, and then we could talk about how we think this is all going to affect California with some of the senators and laws and taxation that's taking place here.
Right. So you know, the first day she was mostly wearing the mask and you couldn't see any of her facial expressions. And she wasn't really talking, because she's listening to all these senators grandstand about this or that and the other thing. And it's all about trying to use the airwaves to get more election results, I guess. I would say net, the Republicans got hurt in that first day because they didn't have a good explanation for how they are not failing to keep their word on, look, if an opening occurs late in a president's term, the argument made the last time this happened with Obama and Judge Merritt was, oh no, we're not going to vote on Merritt because we're too close to the election. We got to let the people decide. And to me, that was really unfair to Merritt and unfair to Obama, because until either way. So Obama ended up getting taken advantage of, and Merritt certainly ended up getting taken advantage of. Trump then wins, and Trump gets the ability because a bunch of different people decided to retire. And so with those retirements, like Justice Kennedy retired, and it was easy for Trump to say, okay, well, I'm going to put in Neil Gorsuch. And, Neil Gorsuch is sort of a male version in some ways of Amy Coney Barrett, because he's more of a law professor that then became a judge on the Court of Appeal for the 10th Circuit, which is in Colorado. She's a law professor that became a judge for the 7th Circuit, which is in Chicago. I don't really think either one of them have met the qualifications I like to talk about, which is, I think anyone that gets on the Supreme Court should have been a lawyer who's tried at least 10 federal cases, ideally to a jury, has been a federal judge and presided over at least 10 cases as a federal district court judge, and then as a court of appeal judge has argued or listened to at least 10 cases. And I just don't think any of them get that kind of experience. They usually take some route that's much more academic, and then they get to the Supreme Court. Frankly, I don't really know how, but they get there without any of that judicial experience, with the exception of, I think, not Kagan, because Kagan was also a law professor. Sotomayor was a district court judge, and Sotomayor brings a lot of practical experience to that bench. Roberts was a quasi-academic. Yeah, I think he argued a couple of appellate cases, but fundamentally, we can go down a list of the others. I think Sotomayor has got way more judicial experience than all of them combined.
How about
Scalia? In many ways, that's a good thing, and I'm saying that's really what we should be trying to do, but that's not the way it works.
Yeah, what about Scalia?
Scalia was kind of a professor as well, although I don't really know where he taught. I want to say he taught at Yale, but that's really just in the back of my mind. We can look that up, because she did clerk for Scalia.
Right.
Scalia was a very conservative justice, and RBG was a very liberal justice, and I guess they were good friends with each other, but RBG did not do the Democratic Party a favor by staying as long as she stayed. She should have retired about 6-7 years ago. She was not in good health. And if she really wanted to do the right thing, she should have said, look, I don't want there to be a big fight about this. I was appointed by a Democrat. I should be able to retire while there's a Democrat. And, I think that this whole whirlwind of the movies and the hashtag RBG and so on got her sort of in this frame of mind of, oh, I can outlive everyone. She was working out with the trainer, and apparently things fell apart in her 87th year. Sad statement. But by and large, anyone that has a critical mind would say one of your duties, if you're appointed by a particular party, which of course each of these people are, is you retire while that party is in power so they get the appointment. She didn't do that. So she set up quite a controversy, but I am impressed. The first day I couldn't really tell the body language and I got tired listening to all the grandstanding. But today when she had the mask off and she was talking and her, was really using good eye contact with the camera, she really convinced me that she's a real human being. Yeah. And I have to say, I think she may have convinced America that she's dealing with a bunch of, jerks as senators, And she's shining compared to all of them, including some of the female senators who, you know, are a bit obnoxious, if you ask me. And then there's a number of them that are that pretty bad.
She did a great job, I thought, of not taking the bait. Look how many times it'd be there's a temptation, right, to like take it and really kind of start a confrontation with someone. That was one of the things that impressed me, is I think you're right. As I watched, I didn't watch the whole thing, but on and off, I watched some of it. And I would say that she was the big winner today, don't you think? And the rest of them looked like a bunch of buffoons.
She was a big winner, that she's a real human being. She has a real family. She's got two adopted black children, one from Haiti, one from Africa, I think. And, you know, she said she cried with her black children over the George Floyd killing, which, you know, it was a very real moment in those hearings when I don't think any of those senators cried at all. I don't think any of them cried. I think none of them could even admit to crying, even if they did cry. I mean, it was kind of a very telling moment of humanity. And I think she carried the American public when she made that statement of, look, I've adopted a couple of kids. I've got seven kids with the two that I've adopted. I'm Catholic. I've got five kids that I've given birth to. I have a career, very highly respected teacher. She's not been on the bench that long. She's not written that many decisions. To me, the overall tone of the hearings is like 1,000 times better than the Kavanaugh hearings were.
I would agree.
The Kavanaugh hearings were kind of a joke. It was like a circus. This has a certain degree of respectability to it. Of course, the Republicans haven't been able to explain their inconsistency, and all their explanations to me are just, you know, bullshit. So to me, if I were voting Republican, which I'm not, and I've in fact already voted through the mail ballot, I would definitely not vote Republican just based on their failure to explain their breach of ethics, breach of commitment. They represented, if it happens to us, we'll live with this rule that everything floats into the next election. That said, I think she's a pretty good choice compared to other people that you might find. It's not an easy job to fill, I'll tell you, because it does take someone that's a Renaissance person. Because the variety of law that you see is all over the lot. I mean, everything from criminal cases to probate cases, literally, everything in between, taxes, patents, copyrights. I mean, the federal laws really touch every aspect of our lives. And there's a lot of federal law, a lot of federal law. And there's a lot more that gets generated daily.
Don't you think, especially in your law, I mean, you've tried cases for years. Don't you think that if you're sitting back as an American citizen, or regardless if you're watching this, I mean, you know, I've done a fair amount of TV, radio, live, on and off and all this. And I always look for a person's body language and their demeanor. And boy, she pulled that one off today. She really did, I thought.
Way better than Kavanaugh, way better than Gorsuch. Gorsuch was pretty good, but very scripted. Way better than Roberts. He was way too scripted. I mean, he had an answer for everything that was like an audio recording. She actually has an answer that's custom generated for the question, and it's not, to me, it doesn't sound very scripted. Certainly, there are some things that she came into the hearings knowing she was going to say and saying them. But by and large, I have to say, I think she's carried herself far better than most of the other people who have gone through this process. She's not lost her temper ever. I mean, she's acted in a very scholarly way, oftentimes educating senators that really don't necessarily want the education. They want to score a soundbite or two.
Do you think that one of her messages was pretty clear over throughout the course of the hearings, that obviously everyone tried to get her personal opinion on potential cases or how she would rule and what her personal views are? Do you think she did a pretty good job at taking, you know, basically just reminding them of her duty as a judge and why she's got to keep those separate?
Yeah, because she's able to use what's called the RBG rule, even though the Ginsburg rule really wasn't her rule. It actually dates from like 50, 60 years ago, that, look, I'm not here to tell you how I would vote on any particular case. There's not going to be any hints, any suggestions, any anything. I'm here to kind of explain who I am, what I bring to the table, why I'm qualified. And, you know, where the line is on that versus, like, if you interview a lawyer for a law firm job, mm-hmm. you kind of want to know, well, you know, where are you biased? Do you like doing plaintiff's cases or do you like doing defense cases? Do you like cases where there's a lot of risk on whether you win, or do you like cases that are slam dunks? And, you know, that kind of interview, you do have to get some sense of, well, how would you vote yeah. on a case where a couple of guys walk in and they're broke and they say, hey, we're going to start a company called Apple. We have no money and we want to give you some stock. Would you take it? You'd like to know, are they going to say, like my old law firm did, are you guys crazy? We would never take stock from you. You got a stupid name for the company. Or whether they would say, hey, that sounds pretty exciting. Let's talk about it. Maybe we can help you. I mean, you'd want to know that. But with a judge, to say, you know, let me give you a hypothetical case. How would you rule? Do you think that, you know, George Floyd was killed? Or do you think he was resisting arrest? I mean, you know, there's so many different angles to that question and so many different ways you have to evaluate the facts. You can't decide that on the fly. You'd have to look at a lot of evidence and hear a lot of testimony before you would decide that. Yeah. And of course, if you did give a flip answer, people would say, oh, you're not being very judicial, because to be judicial really means you look at things from every angle and try to assess where the truth lies on a scale that's often hard to know whether it's truth or true or false, right? Exactly.
Yeah, I think as we talked earlier, before we came on the podcast, that I know the Democrats would never do this because, you know, it's a power grab and it's ego and arrogance. But I would agree with your assessment, is they could turn this whole thing around by not only really endorsing her, but complimenting her and telling her, boy, as you mentioned, Jack, we need more people like you, et cetera, et cetera. I guess my point is, I don't know that this has anything to do. This is going to sway enough people to say, oh, gee, well, now I want to vote for A or B, is my point. What are your thoughts there?
Right. No, I think that the Democrats might be shooting themselves in the foot by arguing against her. Like, to me, it was very nasty that one of the Democrats, I'm trying to remember his name, he also ran for president, the black guy from New Jersey. What's his name?
Booker.
Yeah. I will not be voting for you. Before he even hears what she has to say, he said, I will not be voting for you. Like, to me, it was like, F you. You don't deserve to be here, and I'm wasting my time. It's not very nice, and it's not very judicial, and it's not really the purpose of being a senator. Is supposed to rise above that, but he had to kind of like make this, what I think is a pretty obnoxious statement, that you shouldn't be here, you shouldn't even be agreeing to be considered. And he even started saying things like, you should recuse yourself if this happens. Like, he was dictating a bunch of stuff, and I thought to myself, and then the punchline was, and I will not be voting for you or voting at all. Like, he's like, I'm out of here. Okay, well then give up your Senate position and resign from the committee, because you shouldn't even be on the committee then. It's like non-judicial.
I hate to say it too, but I deal better with common sense myself. And to me, it was really clear, kind of, I hate to say this, but it was really clear that he was the messenger of race, I thought. Whether it was designed that way, or maybe they set up, or maybe that was their strategy. He spent a lot of his time trying to convince, I guess, the listeners that, you know, she had racial bias. I think he spent a fair amount of time on that.
I don't know how he gets that if she's adopted a couple of black teenagers.
Yeah. Or how do you make that case? Yeah.
Adolescents. Right. I mean, I don't know. I think they're teenagers now. She probably adopted them when they were much younger, but it's hard. Adopting any child is hard, and adopting a child from a different race has got to be a lot harder.
Right.
And, you know, you got to support them. You got to figure out a way to get them through high school and college and the whole nine yards. That's a big deal to me. That's a big charitable act on her part. She scored a lot of points
yeah.
in my book by, you know, introducing her family. And I would wonder whether any of those senators have had any sense of the same degree of compassion. I don't think any of them have. You know, most of the senators are pretty wealthy.
Yeah.
And most of them live a very, very elite life. I mean, you, by the way, you don't get paid a lot of money to be on the U.S. Supreme Court. It's not like you make millions of dollars. Mm-hmm. I think the standard salary is like maybe $250,000 or $300,000 a year for what really is probably at least 3,000 hours a year of work, because you're always thinking about these cases, I'm sure. Some people probably work harder than others.
Right.
It's probably at least a 2,000 hour a year. So I don't know whether you would say that's, you know, $100 an hour for your time. I mean, that's peanuts. There are lawyers that bill $1,000 an hour and are less qualified than her. $1,000 an hour for 2,000 hours is $2 million. She's getting a fraction of that. Yeah. So just think about that, because living in D.C. is not cheap, and she's moving her whole family to D.C. I mean, I don't know what she's doing with her real estate in Chicago, where she lives now, but maybe a lot more pricey to live in D.C. than it is in Chicago right now.
Yeah. Well, with the few minutes we have left, let's kind of talk a little bit about, round it up with California again. I know that that's been our ongoing topic about relocating, moving, what's it going to take. We've talked about some of the big names, Elon Musk, and I think there was a big financial services group or someone that made the exit to, I forget, out of California.
Schwab. Yeah, Schwab.
Was that right?
Charles Schwab has been a centerpiece of San Francisco.
Yes.
And San Francisco office space, and he's packed up and moved, I think, to Texas.
I'll tell you what, he's also a big presence. The only reason I know that is because I'm a golf fan and I golf there, but he's got a big presence in Monterey and Pebble Beach, and he may be exiting that whole thing. Matter of fact, it's a funny story. There was a home years ago on Pebble Beach that, because it was been in the families for so many years, someone kept trying to buy this family out to get that home off the middle of this beautiful Pebble Beach golf course, right? And no one could do it. But one day, somehow, Charles Schwab did it. Whatever check he wrote to get them to get that piece of property on Pebble Beach. My point is, if he's vacating California like that, that's one of those big names that we talked about.
I think we're going to see more and more of them, Joe, because I think that there's just too much of the negatives that are playing out with these fires. I mean, the uncertainty of the fires, because it's not obvious to me that it's going to end. It's not obvious to me that we won't have another fire season next year and the year after, and air quality has been injured as a result. And a lot of people are not going to be buying any housing anywhere near those fires.
Right.
And when you have that kind of thing where people start questioning, well, I'm paying these big taxes. The tax rate is among the highest in the nation. There's only one place higher, I think, and that's New York City, because there's both a city tax, a county tax, a state tax. You know, there's three layers of taxation in New York that make that burden in New York even higher than California. But California is talking about raising taxes to like 16.6, and then from there jumping to 20 wouldn't be very hard. So when you look at it, as I said, you know, you can't justify whether or not spending the time in California is going to make sense compared to where, how you decide to spend your time in other places. So by and large, I think we're going to see, particularly in the COVID era where lots of things get done by Zoom anyway, you're not really required to be in California. I think you're going to see a lot of people go to Nevada, Texas, maybe Florida, maybe the state of Washington, because that's a zero tax. Tennessee is a zero tax. Delaware is a zero tax. I mean, these places have pluses and minuses, but they are the minority of states where the state has taken the view that we are not going to tax our citizens through income taxes.
Yeah,
they get taxes in other ways, but California gets taxes in those other ways as well. Our sales tax is pretty high. And our property tax is high just because, not the percentage, but because the assessed values keep going up whenever you buy a piece of property. I mean, I don't know how people buy these properties for $10 million and pay the 1% on the $10 million. It's a pretty sizable $100,000 plus check every year. That's not a trivial amount of money.
Well, on top of that, of course, they limited the mortgage tax benefit interest right off to $750,000, and max property tax now is $10,000. So, you know, you don't even have any benefit for that even anymore.
Right. So, I mean, I don't know how people, young families in particular, can say, oh, yeah, we want to buy this $5 million property, which, of course, is not necessarily a lot of property. I mean, it's not like you get 100 acres for $5 million. You might get, I don't know, 3,000-4,000 square feet these days for that. You don't get very much. And we were talking before we did the show, they build out here brand new and produce brand new houses for under $100 a square foot. I'm just shocked. Land and all. And in California, you can't even get a remodel to happen for less than $300 or $400 a square foot. So, I mean, I don't know how these numbers break. It must be the mass production that they do here. And the cost of labor is a lot cheaper here because people work for less.
Before we go, two things. Give our listeners kind of maybe three or four things that you might say, gosh, I had no idea about Florida until I spent some time here.
So my parents were here from about 20-odd years ago. They moved from New York because they said New York was too cold. Whenever I came in to visit them, which was typically on either my mom's birthday in February or my dad's birthday in April, I always felt like it was too hot, too humid, too nasty. And the minute I got into the airport, I felt like, man, I'd like to turn around. The airport was air conditioned, but the minute you got out of the air conditioning into that sense of humidity and heat, you felt like, man, this is terrible. But I have to tell you, now that I've been here for a while, there really is a season that happens in about September, October, where the humidity totally goes away. It does rain, but by and large, the rain keeps things pretty fresh. And the air temperature is balmy and decent without humidity. So there's definitely a season for being in Florida that's not as bad as when I used to visit. It's taken me a while to figure that out. That's point one. Point two is that people are very much open to having you have your independence here. That is to say, there's a respect for property rights. There's a respect for, if this is your land, this is your land. People shouldn't trespass. There really shouldn't be a lot of regulation about it. If you want to shoot your gun in your backyard, you should be able to do it. If you want to set up target practice, so long as the bullets aren't flying over to the neighbor's side of things, it's your land, man. You do what you want. So there's sort of this open-mindedness. The third thing is there really are a lot of outdoor activities here that don't necessarily exist in California, at least during the period of COVID. They've got this more open view that, hey, we can have groups at the pool and recreation, albeit with masks. I think in California, at least the place I was doing my swimming, they closed the club down. They still got paid the dues, but they just closed the thing down saying it's too risky, the air quality was bad. I mean, here they're more like, hey, we want people to exercise. We want them to be, you know, taking care of themselves. And that's the fourth thing. Let me say the fourth thing. I actually think the medical services here are arguably better than California. And I say that knowing that Stanford is a great medical center. But I have to say, I really think they do take seriously, because they have an older population here, getting people to take care of themselves. And so my mom has been to the hospital a couple of times in the midst of this whole situation, my brother who recently died. And I have to say, I've spent a lot of time in the hospital with her, and I'm impressed by, like, what I would say is spa-like services in those hospitals where they give you a menu. Anytime I went to a hospital, they just said, this is your food. They didn't say you have a choice. Now they give you a menu, and they say, here, you can order fish, you can order vegetarian, you can order meat. I was shocked. And by the way, she pays zero. Wow. She pays zero for this. It's completely covered by her health plan.
Well,
and so you know, if you have to grow old somewhere and you need medical care, I'd say Florida is probably one of the top places in the world or in the United States to consider, because any hospitals that I visit in California, they've always seemed like, hey, man, you're in an institution, you might as well be in prison.
Yeah.
We have control of things. No, seriously, they take a completely different view. It's more spa-like here in at least the hospitals I visit.
Well, that's good information to know. Before we wrap it up, where can someone reach you if you need some of the law services now that you're spanning the globe?
Well, we've always had a national practice, so now we're going to have, in addition to our West Coast offices, we're going to have East Coast offices, actual physical offices, which is good, actual talent, which is good. And so you can reach me still directly by my cell phone, which is 650-444-2240. But email is obviously the usual first point of contact, which is jrusso, J-R-U-S-S-O, at computerlaw.com. The beauty of having a website is basically you can be reached anywhere in the world. That's just the beauty. And people go to the website and they say, hey, and particularly now that we have the videos and other sort of information, the podcast, people do get to know you pretty rapidly now. It's an interesting process. So I have to say the world has changed in a way that allows people to gain the speed of trust a lot faster.
Makes sense.
Your website and all the links to it really represent a form of personal vouching.
Yeah.
Like, you don't really even need someone to vouch for you. They merely need to go on your podcast and see you have so many different people that you've worked with that your network is so big. And my guess is you're not meeting those people daily. You're not meeting them at all because of COVID-19. You're just connecting with them over video.
Yeah.
I have to tell you this, the sense I get is this is going to continue for a while, Joe.
I would agree.
This might continue right through the next presidential election. Literally, we may be talking about this. We may be talking about this in 2024.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think it's more to this to come. So, well, we'll catch up. We'll catch up next week. Until then, take care of yourself. And sorry to hear about your brother again.
Well, you know, I think he's probably in a happier place right now. I did witness him getting last rites, and hopefully that works. You know, they say that you can be redeemed at the last minute in the Catholic Church. He obviously had a lot of sins to confess for, but I think he got his last rites. So hopefully he's there in heaven looking down on all of us and saying, hey, it's a lot better up here than it is down there.
Yeah.
I hope that's true.
Yeah. All right. Well, take care of yourself.
Thanks, Joe. Thanks for having me.
We'll check in with you next week.
I look forward to it. Thanks very much. Bye-bye.
Take care. Joe Cacciaro, along with Jack Russo. This is Real Estate Radio Live. For more information, you can go to reradiolive.com. Take care. Have a great afternoon.
You've been listening to Real Estate Radio Live. For more information on today's program, visit reradiolive.com. That's reradiolive.com. Subscribe to our podcast. Discover more at reradiolive.com.